And what these show graphically is what happens to an ordinary Middle England city. Look at these pictures carefully. How can we have a housing market that operates with a house like that that's to let, flooded regularly? How can we have any economic regeneration with a city like that? And this is one of the most attractive cities in the country. This is the place people want to come to for their weekends. How can we talk about cultural creativity and growth in a city where this happens? York is a city that's got used to it. It spends a very significant proportion of its very scarce funds as a local authority on responding to climate change and to risk and to managing that risk. If that carries on, it's a bust city. It's not a city that can respond. And I don't say that to be alarmist. I say it because if it's happening in York, it's certainly happening. Felixstowe, in Hull, in all sorts of other parts of the country who are damaged and affected by climate change. This is not just geographically located. Floods matter, and they matter to some places. But sudden freak outbursts of weather matter to others. Changes in the way we respond are going to matter to all of us. So that's what I think the issues are. It goes right to the heart of our housing market, our environmental, our economic development, the ways in which we manage our towns, our cities, our villages. And what do we have to be focused on? I think for all voluntary and community organisations, we need to be thinking about protection. We need to be thinking about how do we cope when things go wrong. When the floods happened in 2008-9, did I get that right? The very many floods all over the place. There were parts of the country that responded better. They responded more readily. There were other parts of the country where chaos ensued for weeks, months, years to follow. That's to do with local leadership. That's to do with local resilience. That's to do with how we build in that sort of protection. Recognise we live in risky times. Because unless we identify what that risk is and protect against it, we will never be able to respond to some of the real challenges that we face, which are, I think, among the greatest that we face as a society. But this is bad stuff. This is tricky stuff. Identifying risk is scary, but knowing where an old person living on their own is absolutely part of what we do. It also provides us huge opportunity, because we are a sector, if no other sector, that has always been able to see opportunity for doing things differently. And the opportunity that work on climate change in all your communities, all the communities I know about, has brought people together, has enabled people to identify common threats, has enabled people to see different ways of doing things, has enabled people to think quite differently about their communities and their neighbourhoods. And I think that's a huge opportunity. And the real opportunity is to ensure that the way in which we make this transition from being a country that had, by and large, a steady climate. Now, we've always had trickiness in our climate. I don't want to pretend that's not the case. By and large, some steadiness. To a country where all the records, all the evidence suggests we will face dramatic weather events. Now, how we describe it, what we want to call, I can't be bothered with discussing things with climate change deniers. As far as I'm concerned, we know we are going to face some tricky weather events. How we deal with that, we can do in the unjust way that I described at the beginning. Or we can put social justice at the heart of it. And we can say the only way we can go through this transition is to do it safely, carefully, and keeping a really clear focus on the poorest places. Social justice is one of those terms that's easily bandied about. Everybody thinks they know what it means. Not quite sure how to describe it. And I want to spend just a couple of minutes on this particular slide, because I think unless we get it right on all three bits of how we talk about social justice, we're just talking in a fluffy way, which nobody will understand. What I mean, and everybody who writes about this means, is distributional justice, making sure that we are really equal and fair in the way in which we distribute the resources both to mitigate and to adapt. That when we invest in different ways of preventing food security, when we invest in making sure that fuel is provided, we do it in a way that's equally and fairly distributed. But that it's procedurally just too. We know, we all know, don't we, which parts of the country have the loudest voices, which interests have the loudest voices. We know which voices are heard at times of difficulty. And everything I've described is talking about entering a time of difficulty. Procedural justice means getting that right. And when I talk about the voice of the voluntary sector, our ability to get the message across, it is at the heart of the notion of procedural justice that there needs to be a voice, sorry, I've just been talking to you earlier, for Hull, just as there is for Hampshire. We need to have that voice just as clearly and profoundly articulated in the places that are often overlooked. And the third bit of social justice is justice between the generations. A girl born today will probably live till she's 125. We have a real